Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And we're leading with you as leaders as well. This show is also sponsored by reclaimingtherepublic.org. If you go to mobistrippress.com and reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will find all sorts of content, as I keep telling you. So please go and discover what you can learn. And if there's not enough there, I think I have contact information. By all means, please let me know, and I'll send you an email, or we'll address it on the show. You name it. How would you like you or your group or organization to get a free presentation by me, the host of this show? Free. As a matter of fact, any day, any time, free. A presentation from me. If you go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and my Take Action page, I have a video presentation, my last presentation, as my irrefutable argument for Republic Review. If you click on that, you'll get spontaneously, that link will take you to YouTube, and it will play that video of me presenting that to, I believe it was the Northwest Grassroots at the time. And so I just ask you, you know, what is the value of that, being able to just click a link and then have instantaneous informational entertainment? Actually, I'll be honest, I may not be entertaining, and I may not be informative, or I shouldn't say informative. What is it? A fusion of entertainment and news. I am not that at all. I really don't care about necessarily entertaining you. I mean, that may be a byproduct, and nor do I care too much about the news. What I care about is solving the problem. Again, this is a solution-based show. This is not a show that we're going to sit and vent about the problem du jour, because I really don't care about the problem du jour. The problem du jour is that every problem is stemming from and has everything to do with federal government overreach. And so as soon as we start understanding that, and the fact that we can actually do something about that, then that's big, that's good, that's the way we want to go. Getting engaged. I am setting up crowdfunding. I'm going to be mentioning this on a regular basis now, just to kind of let you know, so that when I actually do this, you'll go, oh, okay, there we go. So you can kind of understand why and what we're doing. We're looking to pull in enough money to run TV ads and so forth for doing these rodeos, so that we can kind of spell out why and what we need just to get this stuff done. And folks, it's going to cost money to get one of these states flipped. I mean, I'm not talking about Soros' billions of dollars. He pours millions and millions into these states to basically steal your property by getting communists in office. And so what we want to do is we actually want to stop that. We want to stop the perversions of these states and the Republic. All I need is one state. And so we're focusing on six. I think I increase my odds as I go to these six. And call me up. We can talk about this, because there's been a lot of thought and discussion, and we've worked through a lot of the issues. Kind of like the framers, they worked through all the issues during the convention, so that when they were actually dealing with the ratification debates, they had the exact same conversations during the convention, during the Constitutional Convention, so they knew what to say and so forth. We will have the second interview with Dr. Vile, and I appreciate you taking your time listening and learning, and I appreciate those who have watched that presentation online already, but I would really appreciate it if you would actually go watch that. Look at the slides. The slides are just above there. The content is there. Tell me what you think. I would like to hear your thoughts on this. And let me explain that as far as what I need to do here is I need to get you and others involved, so that that the second presentation was really new material. So it's not necessarily new material. It's just something I've never done the presentation on, because 9 times out of 10, people want to just hear what the solution is. And then they, you know, naturally ask, but not too many people, you know, want to stick around for another hour presentation or something like that. So people's time is valuable. And I get that. Spending 30 minutes to watch a video is a big investment of your time. But we're talking about our future. We're talking about our grandchildren's future and our great, great, great grandchildren. So let me explain the thing that we've got to do in moving this forward and what our primary target is. And I want you to be clear. This is not about educating the electorate. You're going to hear Griffin. You're going to hear all sorts of people talk about we've got to get everybody educated. No, the framers did not take time to go get people educated. When there was a problem, they took action. And what they did was they focused the action on those who were in the position of power to act. And that is our leaders that we elect. Now, we have leaders in business. We've got leaders throughout the community. But the leaders that need to lead to solve this problem, right? I mean, if your souffle fell, then you need to get a leader in the bakery to take care of that souffle. But when you've got a problem with the Constitution, then those people that actually have the power and oversight are your state legislatures. So we got to get them going. And that's why we need to make sure that we're pulling in constitutional candidates to replace these guys. In addition to that, we need to start cleaning up our counties. I can't tell you enough how important it is to start ensuring that your county commissioners and your sheriff, especially your sheriff, if you don't have a sheriff that's following the Constitution, you have a good likelihood that you've got a sheriff that's turning his head, allowing bad things to happen, and then basically frustrating good people, because that's all I see in my neck of the woods, I don't see sheriffs championing the Constitution like we should be. For this area, it is problematic, and the elections are coming up, and we're going to start getting engaged in ensuring that we're supporting the right and the most constitutional candidate. So with that, and I've got maybe 10 seconds, so I'll get back into cleaning up these local communities and what we need to do and how to do that in a little bit more detail, because I have a little bit of time after, about 2 minutes after the break. So we're going into the break, and when we come back, we will be with Dr. Vile in second day interview with him. And so I think you will find this very informative, and I know it will help get your brain around what the problem is and what we need to do. So thank you very much. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Rippey Homes is a family-owned business that has been building homes in the Spokane area for over a decade. For years, they've offered their customers an array of construction projects and services, but due to market demands, they now exclusively focus building high-efficiency homes and business offices, offering custom turnkey solutions for customers seeking to save money on operational costs while enjoying the latest innovations and construction technology. They understand many of these features can be expensive, but this is why they work closely with a team of leading designers to integrate the details and options that suit your needs. When it comes to translating designs into reality, the artisans they employ make this happen. If you're interested in building a cutting-edge dream home or office, then contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. This is G.R. Mobley. The reason the progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost all billionaires in the world are funding a vast array of different groups, and their efforts are to undermine our Republican Constitution. If you don't believe me, Google the donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, and many other state rights, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved and supporting programs based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Thank you. Hey, folks, it's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I have learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Vaughn Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money on just any good dentist. That's why it took me a couple of years to find a great dentist like Dr. Vaughn Tracy. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Vaughn Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I ask you to give Dr. Vaughn Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 466-6614. Again, sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. Thank you. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. If you've listened to my weekly show, Reclaiming the Republic, right here on Red State Talk Radio, every weekday evening from 6 to 7 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. It is a hard, fast contract. In accordance to Article 7, the states are the only stakeholders in this contract, and inherent in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight over the contract. This means they can audit the contract against the general government and the unconstitutional powers they are exercising. Any single state can perform this audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what I refer to as republic review. Please read my executive summary on reclaimingtherepublic.org to learn the details about Republic Review. Thank you. Okay, folks, we are back, and as promised, we have Dr. John R. Vile from Middle Tennessee University back with us again. And welcome back, Dr. Vile.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And as we kind of terminated the last conversation, we really ran out of time, but I was really waiting this past month and a half, 2 months now, with bated breath to get your take on what you believe we need to do. And I guess there's this premise that I have this suspicion that you agree that what the federal government is doing is well outside the enumerated and the what the framers had created in the constitutional contract and what the states had actually ratified. And based on how it was sold to them, this is how it's going to go down, that we, if we want to do something, we're going to amend this. And so how do we get back, or what do we need to do to get the federal government back into the framework and scope of the Constitution?
Okay. Let me go to your premise. I think you're half right. Maybe more than half. I think that there were certainly, you know, there certainly was an emphasis on the part of the Federalists supporting the Constitution on enumerated powers. Now, there was also, particularly when the Bill of Rights was adopted, there was an effort to leave some room for implied powers. So when you get to the 10th Amendment, which reserves powers to the state, it leaves out a key word that was used under the Articles of Confederation, which left open the door for some implied powers. Now, I think it's true that certainly there were Federalists, James Madison, and to a somewhat lesser degree, Thomas Jefferson among them, who were later surprised with how elastic the necessary and proper clause and the couple other clauses of the Constitution had become. Certainly they were arguing for closer to, I think, what the intent of the Federalist Papers was, and closer to what we today would refer to as strict construction.
Right, and if I can just inject, Madison was very clear in his veto of the infrastructure, what's known as the Bonus Bill in 1817, that you could not use the necessary and proper clause for anything other than the enumerated powers. And he actually, in that
in that veto, he listed all of those magical clauses that I like to call them.
Right.
The supremacy, necessary and proper, general welfare, and also the commerce clause, that those were not portals to gaining new powers, roles, or responsibilities, that the only way that they could have created, which would have been the foundation of the Department of Transportation in that bill, would have been by amending the Constitution. He actually wanted to sign that, but he says you have to go to the states. If I remember correctly, he pleaded them to go to the states and request an amendment.
Madison and Jefferson are both a little ambiguous on this. Frankly, when they were in power, they tended not to think so much that they needed amendments as they did when rivals were in power. And, you know, I'm not accusing them of being hypocritical. I think they genuinely thought, you know, we're going to make interpretations that are within the scope of what's there. It's other people that we have to worry about. The other thing with Madison, of course, is Madison had initially opposed the establishment of the National Bank, which was, you know, McCulloch versus Maryland was later the decision which probably did the most to enhance implied powers in our history.
With Marshall's ruling, yes.
Right, John Marshall's ruling, which didn't come actually till 1819, which would be at post-Madison. But when Madison was president, even though the first bank had lapsed during the War of 1812, the government decided that they needed an institution like this, and he supported it on the basis, basically, of precedent, that, you know, we had already argued this in the Washington administration. He had been on the losing side, but that's, you know, but
well,
the issue had basically been resolved. Now, when Andrew Jackson came into office, Jackson took a completely different view and said, I don't care what Marshall decided, I have an independent decision to make as president. And as president, Jackson, of course, oppose the establishment of or reestablishment of the bank.
Of the bank,
or recontinuation, right. I guess I should say.
Right, but in the Assumption Act, which is when you're talking about when the implied was being sold, Madison was really clear that those implied powers didn't exist when he was debating with Hamilton. And if I remember correctly, the only reason he basically shut down his argument against it and just kind of let it happen was at a very long begging and pleading by Thomas Jefferson, who had ulterior motives because there was a compromise that was floated to getting this
right thing
passed. And that compromise was to move the seat of government to what we knew now as Washington, D.C.
Right. That's right. There's believed to have been a dinner that Madison hosted between Hamilton and Jefferson, in which this deal was sort of made. That's exactly right.
Right, and it was all about land speculation, where Jefferson saw the opportunity of going, well, if I buy up a bunch of land, and Washington kind of liked that too, because they were both land speculators. And as a matter of fact,
they weren't the only ones.
Right.
If you want a big win, go to James Wilson, and there are several others.
Yes,
a couple of whom went bankrupt basically over this.
Okay,
yes.
But back to my premise on.
I'm sorry, that's the professor in me wandering about.
And I'm with you on this because it's a very intricate thing. But
it is.
In his very last act, in that bonus bill veto, that was his act as a president that basically
yes.
said you cannot use these things, that they only apply to enumerated powers. So anyway, going back to what you believe we could do or we need to do or should do to get
Well, I mean, a lot of it goes to the electorate, quite frankly. We may be even more conflicted sometimes than Jefferson and Madison were, in that we want conflicting goals. And, you know, particularly on the issue of federalism, which is, you know, what are proper powers for the states, what are those for the nation, we often find that people take contrary positions that seem more related to issues other than federalism. And probably the best example of this is the sanctuary cities issue right now.
Right.
So traditionally, I mean, it's hard to know who, you know, what side is which, but you could pretty well argue that sanctuary cities gives local local cities and states the power to formulate what policies they think are best for them. But you have a Republican president and Congress who are basically saying, no, this is out of accord with a national policy that we want to pursue in restricting immigration.
Which was delegated to the federal government, clearly in the Constitution, in Article 1, Section 8.
It's not quite that clear. There's the power of naturalization is given to Congress.
Right.
But on who you can, you know, on just who can you have in your state without necessarily giving citizenship requirement, I don't think you can pin that down quite as closely. But again, I mean, you could try to tie it. You certainly could try to tie it.
I think there's a better chance.
Congressional power over naturalization.
I think there's a better chance of tying that than healthcare, education, energy, and all of these other things.
Well, and of course, you know, there have been two great three great transformations of the Constitution. You know, one is the Civil War, and the primary transition there is widening the rights that are protected, you know, by the national government. Then you get, you know, the progressive era where we get, you know, the 17th Amendment, which I think we're going to talk about,
right?
You know, national income tax and the like. And then, of course, the biggest has been the New Deal, which is then sort of reaffirmed in Lyndon Johnson's Great Society and whatever. And I think what you find with, you know, with any governmental programs is once they get established, they are extremely difficult to root out because they have their own constituency. And again, you know, to take a contemporary example, you know, what is the national government's role in natural disaster? It's hard to say from just reading the Constitution. I mean, you know, there's national defense to some degree, a hurricane or typhoon, you know,
right,
an event like this. Series of tornadoes that they certainly deal with domestic tranquility.
Well, let me cut you off right there real quick because we got a hard break coming up, and we'll get back into the domestic tranquility as soon as we get back, folks. Stay tuned, please.
My show, Reclaiming the Republic, is more than an educational show. My intent is also to work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way, we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is result-oriented and is live across the Republic. Download and share our podcast. Like, follow, and share our page, Mobius Strip Press, and the articles and content posted on our Facebook page. Get informed about groups in the local area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests as to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. I'm amazed at just how much Rippey Homes takes pride in their partnerships. From the designers they work with, the artisans they employ, and you, the homeowner, they relish in getting it right the first time. To do this, they place their focus up front on what you want and what you need and begin forming a plan like a sculptor taking care of the intricate details to ensure it meets your expectations. Whether you need innovation in a custom home to harmonize with the environment while offering the latest in building materials and technology, Rippey Homes takes a bottom-up approach that centers around you, the customer. They know that you are the integral component in the American dream, which is how they help you build your dream. To make your dreams become reality, contact Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. This is G.R. Mobley. I'm working with Trevor Lawton, Douglas V. Gibbs, Tom DeWeese, John Hancock, and many other good patriots in setting up rodeos for Republic Review this summer. We're doing this in Wyoming, Utah, South Dakota, Idaho, Kansas, and North Dakota for this election cycle. If you are beginning to understand the power of Republic Review, then we need your help one way or another. More importantly, if you live in these states or know any patriotic leadership, whether that's an elected official, grassroots leader, or political leader, please reach out to me on Facebook or email me at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know who we can work with in organizing these events. It is our intent to get one and hopefully all of these states to call for Republic Review. If we can get this started, I promise you we will make America great once and for all. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are supporting to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
Okay, folks, we are back with Dr. Vial. Thank you for holding on. And you were speaking of domestic tranquility, but before you get into finishing your thought, I know you have a JD, so I know you're really good at, you know, setting up arguments and so forth. But
I'm going to stop you there because I have a PhD. I have not been tainted with a law degree.
Oh, I thought you had a JD from.
No, I do most of my writing in the law, but I had a subfield in political science that dealt with judicial process and constitutional law, but I don't have a JD.
Oh, okay.
So you'll have to attribute my argumentativeness to either my marital situation or my training in debate and mock trial. I'm not sure.
And that's true. You've got extensive.
I was a debater in college, and I coached mock trial here for 25 years, and I've had some good success with it.
But before you get back into that, I wanted to circle back real quick before I lose my train of thought.
Sure.
That you basically asserted that the Constitution has gone through three shifts, and these are shifts of paradigms. They're not shifts of contract, because the 14th Amendment may have broadened the application of privileges, immunities, and what some people call due process and those types of things. But it didn't open up any new doors in creating the federal government. In other words, they basically, from that point forward, if I remember correctly, started using statutes and regulations to moving things the way they wanted and creating changes to the Electoral College and so forth. That's when they started using statutes and or regulations instead of following the precedents that they went out the gate with in amending the Constitution.
Well, you had four amendments, of course, during the progressive era.
Absolutely. But those amendments, again, are only applicable to the changes that they made, whether that be the 17th Amendment or the 16th Amendment. It didn't basically say, oh, and by the way, down the road, we're going to be able to grant ourselves any other powers without having to follow the Article 5 process.
Right. And again, the ones that I mentioned the other main one that I mentioned is the New Deal, and that is the most subject to what you're saying here. There was literally, unless it would be that, lame duck. Basically, it left no constitutional imprint that sort of reflected the changes in the scope of governmental activity.
I mean, right.
You know, the ABCs of all the governmental programs that were introduced, you know, have perpetuated themselves without a constitutional amending base.
Okay, so
and
let me
that is yes.
let me throw this paradigm of history, because I think you'll agree with me that the ratification debates were pretty much obscured. I mean, as we talked before, that they came out, I think, in the 1840s. So we today, now that we actually have access to them because of the beauty of the internet, it's not like those things were ever published, put in every library, put in every state, and so forth. They were kind of left in obscurity. And so the understanding of what was really defined as the limitations of the Constitution was obscured for such a long time that during these progressive era and the New Deal and so forth, we had to rely upon these great minds that have been building case law, constitutional law, precedents, and so forth. And I'll just use the word, we were duped. We were duped from the very beginning with some of the arguments that Marshall made and so forth. And so I assert that now that we have the true fidelity, it's kind of like if I bought one of these mind game pictures out of a garage sale. And right. I said, I just want to buy this for the frame. And I pay the kid $5 and I take it home and I, take the frame off. And lo and behold, behind this is a classic work of art that was family owned and it was stolen, 100 and some years sure. ago. And all of a sudden I say, hey, I've got this and it's worth a lot of money. Well, actually, I don't have it. It still belongs to somebody else because that is a possession. That's property. And just like the powers, roles, and responsibilities were delineated, and as Nichols said in the ratification debates of Virginia, that when we only delegate a certain amount of property, because I think he talked about 1,000 acres, and if I gave 500 acres to the federal government or we delegate these powers, do I have to do a new deed on the power or the state or the property that I still possess? And I'm paraphrasing, of course, but he says,
right.
No, I don't have to because I still own that. And so that right. these roles, responsibilities were property of the states, and the federal government duped us. And I'm taking a lot of latitude here.
I guess the qualification I would add is that in many ways, first, the chronology is not quite right, but close. I mean, we got Madison's notes of the convention at about 1840.
Right.
Many of the debates within the states were published in the papers contemporaneously. They are now being collected in a 30-40 volume set done by University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
A great
mm-hmm.
work. But in some sense, I'd almost have to say that we were. I mean, I don't know that I'd use the word deuce, but we have been willing participants in this. We have. For better or worse, and I'm certainly, I'm familiar with the arguments and not insensitive to those that say we've gone too far, but we have faced crises in our history where we have been willing to, look the other way when it comes to explicit constitutional foundations for them and looked at the particular case at hand. And, you see this, I'm finishing a book right now on disaster relief in the United States. And early in our history, we had intense debates over, whether it was proper for Congress to appropriate any money for anybody that, that was a particular area or a particular place as opposed to something that applied overall. And over time, we have had less such arguments, and the arguments tend to be more about how much aid shall we give, and what conditions shall we put with it, and, is the aid that we're giving likely, as in the case of some of these hurricane insurance, is it likely to lead to future, disasters, down the road?
Right. Right. But I guess what I'm saying, and let me change the gears a little bit, and let's look at this as, let's say we move forward. Let's say I actually have this charisma, this power of influence that I can actually get a state. South Dakota, North Dakota, if you're listening, Wyoming, you know, a state that is a true bastion of conservative thought and recognizes that the Constitution is way out of line. And they actually come to the, you know, the realization or agree with me that they do have the power to audit the Constitution and to step up and say, federal government, we never gave you these things. We never, through the Article 5 process, you were running us into ruin and so forth. So they move forward with this audit and they make the appeal, and I assert that what Jefferson and Madison did with the resolutions in their appeal, because clearly they didn't try to amend the Constitution to, you know, to redo or undo the Sedition Acts. They appealed to the other states to say, this is unconstitutional. You're going to let this actually happen? And so they were trying to coalesce the states instead of convening
an Article
5. Right, and
what happened, of course, there is they couldn't get any other states to go along with them. Now, what was more successful is they did win the election of 1800.
Right.
And they began a more, you know, restrictive view of the powers of the national government.
Sure.
But they never actually got any other states to go along with the Virginia and Kentucky resolution.
Right. And what happened was they let the genie out of the bottle on nullification. But what my point is let's say I get, and I believe the sentiment in these conservative states, these strong, hard red states, flyover states, let's call them. But I believe the sentiment is such that when they wake up and they realize that they still possess the authority and the power of the Constitution, I don't think it's going to be just one or two states. I believe that we're probably, how many states challenged just Obamacare? And how many states are challenging the fact that, you know, this federal government is in spend out of control danger of us going into, you know, a real financial crisis and what have you. So if all of a sudden I have 15, 20, 30 states, maybe even 34 states that say we want to audit this Constitution, what do you believe is, you know, going to happen? And again, I've said this before, I'm not looking for an Article 5 or making any changes. I'm just trying to get back to enforcement or forcing the federal government to say, okay, we believe we need to do these things, and here's amendments to do them. We're going to get back into following this thing. And to me, I'd be very happy.
Yeah, and I mean, you had a little bit of this in to go back to the FDR.
But let me give you a couple of minutes. We're going to go to break here, and so I want you to ruminate in answering that, and the floor will be yours, sir. As I'm expecting to hear some music coming up, and actually there it is. See, I'm clairvoyant on time maybe, but anyway. Doctors, please stay tuned, folks. We're going to be right back, and the doctor will be able to answer this perpetuating problem that I think we have. Thank you very much, and stay tuned. This is G.R. Mobley. Most of you understand the importance of having strategic goals. But do you have a long-term strategic goal for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth. And many dentists will take your money to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail. And if you don't have a long-term strategy, you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain or restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Tracy at VonTracyDDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. Thousands of people each month are moving to what is referred to as the Redoubt area. That's REDOUBT. If you're tired of insane liberal policies and you have a growing concern in the ideological makeup of your community, you should do what many others are doing and look into joining us here in the Redoubt area. If you settle on moving to the Spokane area, you need to contact Rippey Homes to help you develop the ideal solution that can help you reduce your operational costs and reduce your dependence on the nation's aging infrastructure. Rippey Homes offers a full package service,
including real estate, Passive House designers, with an array of options to help you blend in with your surroundings. Why risk what is important, your family and your home? So check out Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com. That's Cameron Rippey at cgrippey.com in the heart of the Readout country. This is G.R. Mobley. I've been on the radio for over a year, and for over a decade, I've been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we are going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument, and most do not like it for money reasons. If you have not read my executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can pick up my executive summaries, books, and content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you'll know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content. Most of it's free at reclaimingtherepublic.org and mobistrippress.com as well. This way, you can become a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. Hi, this is G.R. Mobley. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states, in accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution. These conventions require states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. These conventions are unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to get my executive summary on Republic Review and listen to Reclaiming the Republic right here on Red State Talk Radio every weekday evening from 6 to 5 Eastern and 3 to 4 Pacific. Thank you. Okay, thank you for staying tuned, folks. We still have the good doctor. So, Professor, now that you've had time, what do you believe is going to happen if these states feel like they're so disenfranchised and they feel like there's no other resolve but to step up and audit the Constitution? The floor is yours, sir.
You know, I guess if I had the choice, I would say it would be better to try to do an Article 5 convention. If you know what you want to do is to change the Constitution, and you have some proposals, put them out there, try to get them discussed. I think the problem with the audit is I think that there are shortcuts. I think it's much more likely that people are going to, you know, they're going to look to the next election, either at the state level or the national level, and say, you know, well, the last bums we elected, they didn't do it, but this group is going to. And for every person that you think, you know, that thinks that the Constitution has gone too far, you're probably going to have another who thinks that the government ought to be doing more, whether it's in health care or in regard to immigration control or disaster relief or whatever. So, I would encourage anybody who wants to get encouraged in involved in government to do this, but I just, if we haven't done an audit like this after 200 and some years, it seems unlikely that we would do it now.
And the reason is we're actually gaining access to documents that have been, like I said, obscured because of technology. The only way you could have really read the ratification debates is possibly going back to the states and going through their archives of the newspapers or what have you. And I would just find it very...
I can put a perspective on it that's interesting. It's not certainly definitive.
And as you do, I will give you the next problem coming down the pike when you're done.
Okay. One of the interesting things about James Madison, who was, you know, is often called the father of the Constitution,
yep,
probably had as much to do with it as anyone, is he did not want his papers published during his lifetime, because he did not think that that was the appropriate way to interpret the Constitution. He thought the he thought that whatever was decided in debate, the primary thing we ought to be doing is looking at what do the words actually say, and what did they, you know, probably with a caveat, what did they mean at the time that they were written?
Sure, and I absolutely agree with that.
I'm not sure, you know, I think he might say as valuable to historians and political scientists as these documents are, that train has sort of left the station. We, you know, by 1840, we had already pretty much established what principles of constitutional construction were going to be, and he seemed, I mean, he wasn't always satisfied with them, but it was like he thought that was a better way than going back and reading, I'll say, musty documents. I don't know if they're musty or not. They're not to me, because I love them. But
yeah.
Anyway.
But so I absolutely agree with Madison's position, because it infuriates me when people try to bring up some of Madison's artistic license or latitudes that he took in asserting his biases in his notes on the convention. It's not so what I believe is relative.
I have to defend a fellow Virginian here.
Oh, okay.
I'm familiar with those criticisms, and I don't think they're particularly valid, but that's another story for another day.
No, so if I was arguing in the Supreme Court on this case, over the auditing and so forth, when you get into things that happen in a vacuum, whether it's a journal or so forth, it's different than when it actually happens as an official document. A good example of that is the thank you response back to the Danbury Baptist by Thomas Jefferson, and that little line of the separation of church and state,
right,
that was never intended to be an official document. But the veto message back to Congress was an official document. The ratification debates and what was said on that floor was in official capacity. So it's nice to have these little, you know, insights of Madison, Jefferson, and these letters back and forth. But to me, they hold nothing other than opinion or hearsay. And the only thing we really have to go on is what did they actually do? And so those resolutions of Kentucky and Virginia are hard, tangible things that they actually stood up and said, you're violating the Constitution, you can't do this. And what they said in an official capacity, to me, holds water. And there's lots of other really good supporting documents that I, you know, would agree with my argument, but I have to leave those on the table and say, you know, that wasn't in an official capacity. That was done in a vacuum.
Yeah, no, I'm working on a book right now on the Declaration of Independence, and there are all kinds of people who say, well, Jefferson couldn't really have meant a creator God because Jefferson was a deist or this or that. Well, he was writing a public document. And it doesn't particularly matter what Mr. Jefferson
believed, right,
confided to friends. It's what did he say in the document?
Right, right. But and that's true, because in his confidential letters to James, or not James, but to John Adams, he basically, you know, bore his soul in his religious beliefs. And it's interesting how people ignore those things and call him a deist or what have you. But
sure,
that all aside, you're right. Those are personal things. And, you know, I actually wrote about this in my first book about Jefferson's religious views. I know you've possibly skimmed over. You may want to read it again, because he was really moved by a book that was written by Sir Isaac Newton. It was the observations on the revelations of Daniel and the apocalypse. And so that book really had a huge impact on his religious views after that, because here's Sir Isaac Newton, a guy he absolutely respected, saying that he didn't believe any of the true churches existed, and he was committing heresy by writing that book.
He was. There's a recent book on Newton that just came out, and he was definitely, I mean, he believed deeply in Scripture, but he definitely had heretical views by comparison to the established church. And of course,
at that point in time,
Bacon, Locke, and Newton were the three people that Jefferson said he thought were the most important in world history.
Right. Yes. And they were challenging the church's authority of coronation and so forth. But here we go.
Divine right.
We've definitely gone down another tangent and rat hole.
Well, it's what happens when you talk to a professor.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time. But going back to this, what happens, you know, and I know you've probably prefer the process. But I, to me, the audit draws a line and says you can't do this, because down the pike, they're going to create a Department of Babysitting. They're going to it's going to branch out of the Health and Human Services Department, because Hillary's already talked about this. It's already been floated that the state wants to basically start assigning a worker for when a woman finally chooses to go to term with a pregnancy, then that woman is going to be assigned a social worker, and then it's not just going to delivering the child, but she actually, if you've read her book, It Takes a Village, she wants the state involved to ensure that the child does not get introduced into dogma, you know, from religious dogma and so forth in the home. In other words, they're going to start mandating that you can't teach your kids religion and some of these things that, you know, are against what secularism they're ramming down our throats. Well,
there, I think we're protected adequately by the First Amendment, but after the last several years, I'm not so sure of anything anymore.
I believe that the Constitution, because it's a contract, we're protected. And if we draw the line and stand up and say you cannot do it without our permission, it makes it a much harder. And that's what Madison knew. The electorate needed to be protected from themselves, because they would instantly walk down this path of, oh, we need to be fed, feed us now. And then they would surrender something to do that. And he knew that the electorate, he didn't say nice things about them, but he really was
an age where you could tell the truth without getting electorally defeated. Yes. Now we seem to have to pander.
Yes, it could be in Twitter sphere pretty quickly. And
yes, it could.
And so the big thing to me, and I know we're going to be coming up on a hard break, but the big thing to me is that they did create a system, because it was a hard, fast document that I believe that was the divine wisdom that, you know, they recognized, because all the framers asserted that they were inspired by the divine hand of providence, so much so that the very first thing that they did was they demanded, or they basically requested, that Washington make a proclamation of Thanksgiving that you're aware of. And I think that was an absolute recognition that they felt that this was a much greater thing than they could have ever come up with. And by giving...
And that's where their deism actually doesn't seem very consistent. This is particularly true, by the way, of Benjamin Franklin, who usually sort of, you know, God's a creator and that's it, but he does at different times. And Washington certainly, you know, at different times attributes to providence, you know, what I guess was pretty you know, we forget how extraordinary it was, basically, to achieve independence of what was the world's, you know, greatest colonial power at the time.
Here's the interesting thing, Dr. Professor. We're actually at the end of the show, so this is our third segment. And if you would please stay on, I want to record so that we can actually extend this into another show, because it's worth it to me, if you've got the time, if that's okay. Thank you so much, folks. Stay tuned. We'll be back next week, and hopefully we'll have the doctor in these next segments. Have a good one, and God bless.
And so with that, I'm not sure if you noticed, but I alluded to the fact that the roles, responsibilities, and powers that were retained by the states are property of the states. And so regardless of how far down this road you get, even though the good doctor felt like there was precedence and there was this acceptance that those RRPs were good and gone out the gate, no, they're still property. And I'm going to be reading next week Madison's Notes on Property. It's an excellent essay, and it will give you a much better understanding and paradigm of what they believe. Conscience, the right of conscience, was a piece of property to them. And so I don't want to belabor this. I've only got about a minute left here. I just want you to basically understand that what Madison and what the good doctor actually didn't say is, just because the states have gone down this path of allowing these things to happen, I point back to that veto the bonus bill that Madison vetoed, because clearly in there he said that even though they go through, and even if the states agree by the improper process, it still doesn't make it constitutional. There's only one process that will allow it to become constitutional, and Madison in 1817 clearly resonated that. And so when there's this ambiguity of the consistency of Madison, every time in an official capacity, Madison was consistent. He was consistent with the enumerated powers, the limitations of those magical or mystical clauses and so forth. And so if you didn't notice, the one thing he didn't answer was the real question as to what would happen if we went down this process of reclaiming the Republic. I found it interesting that he would have rather convened a convention to amend the Constitution, an Article 5 convention. And I'm going, huh. There's lots of people that deem that as a very dangerous prospect. And so with that, we're done with this show. I'm going to play the last parts of that interview with him tomorrow. And then we'll get into Mr. Griffin's interview as well tomorrow. So stay tuned, and we'll be back tomorrow. Have a good evening.